On Sunday, April 2nd at 11 p.m., Shugan Mabol presents baritone sax and flute player, composer and educator Claire Daly. Join us as we discuss Claire Daly's latest release, 2648 West Grand Boulevard, the jazz interpretations of classic Motown 45s, and more. That's Sunday, April 2nd at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. So funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of the program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is baritone, saxophonist, flutist, composer, and educator, Claire Daly. We'll be highlighting Claire Daly's most recent release, 2648 West Grand Boulevard, jazz interpretations of classic Motown 45s. However, we're going to start off the program by observing National Poetry Month with Sarah Webster Fabio. Sarah Webster Fabio is considered a foundational member of the West Coast Black Arts Movement. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
Save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. My
songs have come pouring down upon us like soft rain. We should be closer to the genius of the late. Now, forever, John Coltrane. Leon Williams on piano, soprano sax, flute, and Sarah Webster Fabio with words composing the air. Together, to the tune of Equinox. And remember, don't fight the feeling.
Coltrane's Equinox. Moaning. certain this tough, tender time of being together. Sucked in by fog, held at bay outside our framed picture window pole. Sacked out on grass, matted rug, celebrating in communion and love the balanced world, the shared humanity. Alive, feeling, daring to really be, being and digging our own soulful, all-feel selves. The dark, no webs of doubt to cloud our clear black minds at one with the night before and behind us. We be night folk, we ride night trains through our world and time and out of it space. Till we be all souls. Soul of man, soul of woman, soul of God, soul of you, soul of me, soul of Coltrane, soul of we. We! We! Out of this world, zapped with ecstasy.
My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Claire Daly.
Claire Daly, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I am so grateful that you've consented to speak with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to.
And,
thank you for having me.
I also want to make clear that I heard you being interviewed recently, and...
Yes.
I wasn't happy because I didn't hear enough of your voice. So you must speak. You really must speak during this interview.
All right. Well, don't worry. That's never a problem. I do lots of yakking.
Excellent.
In fact, I've never heard that before. I didn't hear enough of you.
No.
I don't get that a lot.
Oh, good. Okay. But it was good to hear the music, though, if nothing else. And
well, good. It's all fun. It's all good for different things.
And the music that was being prominently announced was from 2648 West Grand Boulevard. That is your latest release. That's on, what is it, Glass Beach Jazz? Is that the label?
Yes, Glass Beach Jazz.
Where they come from? What's their story?
Well, Glass Beach Jazz is in Northern California, way up north. They're in Fort Bragg. The owner of it and his wife with a partner own the North Coast Brewing Company that makes Brother Thelonious Ale.
Ah.
So a few years back, they invited me to make a record of Thelonious Monk.
That's
music.
Right.
we had a great time with that, and that was on the charts. It did very well, and it was really a lot of fun. We did some touring with it, and they were just amazing. And since then, Doug Moody, who is the man who started the brewery with someone else, since then, he has started this new label called Glass Beach Jazz.
I see.
Baritone Monk was done by the brewery.
Okay.
They used it to promote the Brother Thelonious Ale. And they sent a percentage of all the sales to the Monk Institute in Washington to help towards jazz education. So these people are very altruistic. They're very wonderful people. Their business model is the best I've ever heard. The business model is they serve their community and their employees and their board equally.
Excellent. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a class act up there. They do so much for their community, and they do so much for the jazz community that I can't say enough nice things about Doug Moody or Glass Beach Jazz or Deb Moody or any of them up there. The North Coast Brewing Company is the brewery.
Thank you.
did you wind up being moved to record 2648 West Grand Boulevard, which is the address of Hitsville, USA?
Yes, it certainly is. And I will say that, Doug, we were going out to the Midwest to do some gigs with the Monk Project, and Doug called me and he said, listen, I have an idea. Doug and Deb were going to be there. And he said, we have this idea. So we got to wherever it was, I think somewhere in the Midwest. And he said, how would you like to do a record of Motown tunes? That's how it happened. And he presented it just as that, just as a package. And I said, well, no brainer. That would be a yes, which was a bit of a process, too. It wasn't as easy as it sounded. It was like, oh, I love that music, of course. But there was really a lot of groundwork to do with it all in many ways.
Tell us about the process.
I would say that after Doug asked, we were going to record it just several months later. We didn't have a long time to work on it. I think I had the winter, and it was not my best winter of my life, just personally. So I think I stayed up all night every night listening to Motown on Spotify, and I listened to the whole Motown catalog from Detroit. We were just doing the Detroit years, and wow, what a fantastic refuge that was for me. That was just amazing. That music, besides being the soundtrack for my and many people's youth, it's just such original music, and the forms of the tunes, there's no formula. The tunes are very creative, and when you really start listening to the arrangements, there are little things in there that you just never notice. Like, I put on headphones and I was just under the spell of Motown music for that winter. And a lot of it I knew because I had grown up with Motown music, and a lot of it I didn't know. And some of it was before my time. And Doug suggested some tunes that he liked, some of which are on the record. You know, we collaborated on that. He was cool about everything I wanted to do, and I checked out some of his, and they were very great tunes. So it was a sweet collaboration in a time that I needed something sweet going on in my life. So I'm very grateful for it. My band was very generous as far as coming over to my studio space and just going over tunes and rehearsing and trying things out, and they were really extraordinary also in the project, which I like to really give them kudos for that. Because, you know, when you have really great musicians in New York City, they're busy and they're doing a lot of things, and everybody's trying to hustle and keep our heads above water. And they were very generous to come with their time and work on it all.
Let me mention that your band on this recording, 2648 West Grand Boulevard, is Jerome Harris on guitar. And I think this is his first time with you on a recording.
Yes, it is.
And Steve Hudson on piano, Marianne McSweeney on bass, and your veteran player in your band is Peter Grant on drums.
Yes. I think Peter's a secret weapon on the drums. He's such a great drummer, a great guy. He works. He's a very working drummer, but he's been on all but one, I think, of my CDs, and I just love him. I think he's an incredible drummer. Always very vibrant and lively, but doesn't overpower, which as a baritone player, you have to watch out for, because I love a big, boisterous drummer when somebody else is playing with them, because I'd rather not. I just don't like when the drums overpower everything that's going on. Actually, Marcus McLaurin has been playing in the working band on bass.
Okay.
And he's fantastic. You know, he was with Clark Terry for 30 years.
Wow.
And Jerome came in on it because when I was imagining the project and putting it together, I was thinking, you know, this is a Motown project. I think we either need to have another horn or a guitar. And Doug was a little hesitant to change the instrumentation, adding it, of course, with the piano. But Jerome came to a rehearsal. I think we had some for a while before he joined up. And then he finally came, and we taped it and sent it to Doug, and he was happy with Jerome, needless to say.
Yeah, he's amazing. His addition to what you're doing is amazing.
I feel, in a way, like this could be a Peter Grant, Jerome Harris record.
Mm.
They're both so outstanding on it. I mean, everybody's great on it. I think Jerome and Peter just are sparkling on this record.
I think Jerome also plays bass.
He does. In fact, I tell the story live a lot. He was playing bass with Sonny Rollins for 7 years, and then Sonny heard him play guitar, I think in the dressing room or something, and moved him over to the guitar chair for 6 years.
Nice.
So if you saw Sonny in whatever years those were.
Excellent. Now, you're handling the arrangements on all of these, yes?
I will say yes, but I will also say that in that period of everybody getting together, other people contribute things. And so I come in with my ideas. I'm not writing out formal arrangements that everyone is then playing my version of. Really, we developed a lot of things together.
Okay.
So I will take credit for them, but there has to be an asterisk and say there's a group effort involved.
And you actually double on this release. You not only play baritone sax, you play flute as well.
I do.
I do enjoy hearing you play flute on The One Who Really Loves You. That is beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I like the flute as far as doubling on another instrument.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's my favorite one, and I've been really enjoying it the last couple of years. So I just went with it on this record.
Flute. How long have you been playing?
Well, I got one when I was a teenager. I played alto saxophone first, and then I got a flute a few years later, and then I went off to Berklee Music School up in Boston in the very late 70s. And then I eventually added a tenor and then a soprano. And then I moved back to New York, and I thought I should just try a baritone. Someone was selling one. And I played one note on that horn, and it was a new day.
Wow.
In my life. Yeah, was really instant. So I had all the others, and I had played them quite a bit before. I still do a little bit. But the flute has maintained, I don't know why, I just like the flute. I kind of always had a natural affinity for it. It's odd, because I love low notes, and I'm all about low notes.
Yes.
I love that flute.
Well, thank you for introducing it onto this recording.
Now I think I need to make a whole flute record and catch up.
Hey, that'll be great. I love the flute, and I love vibes. Vibraphone and flute together? Forget it.
Yes. Oh, what a beautiful sound. You know what else is nice? Is muted trumpet and flute.
Wow.
Like a harmon mute.
Yes.
That harmon mute sound and the flute are beautiful together.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds like the next recording's in the works.
Yeah, I think we're working on something here.
Now, I want to talk about your 2648 West Grand Boulevard some more. There are some other tunes that really caught my ear. The sort of bossa nova treatment that you're giving to I'll Be There. Thank you. was my feeling when I heard it.
Oh, great.
I know you said some of the tunes, those were the ones that you brought to the table, because those are the ones you grew up with, I guess. I take it that the Jackson 5 tunes were what you brought to the table.
Yes, I suggested both of those.
Right.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I always loved that tune. I loved it when I was a kid. And, you know, I was little. I was probably in grammar school when it came out. And I just thought it was beautiful. And while I was looking at all the Motown stuff, I thought, well, you know, the Jackson 5, not like Michael Jackson on his own was later, but the Jackson 5 stuff. And I thought, God, there are all these great tunes. And that's one of the ones that I transcribed the tune and made a lead sheet of it. And I just got the band together and we tried some different feels, because some of them, sometimes if you swing pop tunes, they end up sounding like Bill Murray on Saturday Night Live.
Oh,
you know, they end up sounding corny. You don't want them to sound corny.
It's like, yes, ladies and gentlemen, like a lounge singer.
Right.
That's right.
Like,
where you from?
Here from New Jersey.
Where you from? There you go.
And so that's one of the ones. And I had the idea to do it Latin. That was one of my ideas for that tune.
Okay.
And that just was the best choice.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. What you're listening to right now is another Motown recording, but this is the title track from Heaven Help Us All. That's Claire Daly with Solar. Solar consists of Eli Yeaman on piano, Adam Bernstein on bass, Andy Demos on drums and percussion, and of course Claire Daly on flute and baritone saxophone. Before this, we heard several tracks from the featured release of the evening, Claire Daly's 2648 West Grand Boulevard, Jazz Interpretations of Classic Motown 45s. This was recently released on the Glass Beach Jazz label. What we heard before this was I'll Be There, The One Who Really Loves You, What Becomes of the Brokenhearted, and I Want You Back. Before I Want You Back, we heard Let's Cool One by Thelonious Monk. That was Claire Daly's quartet from the Baritone Monk release. This is a North Coast Brewing Company 2012 release. Claire Daly on baritone saxophone, flute, and vocals on others. Steve Hudson on piano, Marianne McSweeney on bass, and Peter Grant on drums. Before that, we heard, also from 2648 West Grand Boulevard, Jazz Interpretations of Classic Motown 45s by Claire Daly, we heard Loving You Is Sweeter Than Ever. Before that, as mentioned, we started off our program after our theme with Sarah Webster Fabio, Together to the tune of Coltrane's Equinox. That is the title track of this release. This is a Smithsonian Folkways 2004 release, and it was originally recorded in 1977. Of course, we opened our program with our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. This is from a compilation, The Very Best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl 1967-1972, RCA BMG release, originally recorded in 1967, this 1998 compilation. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams. Claire Daly will be with Warren Smith at the Baha'i Center on May 2nd, 53 East 11th Street near Broadway. You'll hear more about it later. BAHAINYC.org. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for April 2nd. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar in My Bowl guests so you can see them live. and this week's show features saxophonist Claire Daly. We do have a special treat for you. We're previewing her new release titled 2648 West Grand Boulevard on our blog. It features Daly's interpretations of classic Motown songs, and you can stream the entire CD for free on our blog for a limited time. Head on over to our main website at sugarinmybowl.org for the link. And we also have a review of the new Lee Morgan documentary film. We've got more listings for you this week, so let's get started. First up is bassist Christian McBride, who leads a big band at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club from April 4th through 9th, and returns with the new John Quartet from the 11th through the 16th. Saxophonist Lakeisha Benjamin is at Newark's Gateway Center for a free lunchtime concert on the 5th. Pianist Randy Weston leads the African Rhythms Quintet with Alex Blake on bass at the Jazz Standard from the 6th through 9th. Howard Johnson joins them on tuba as a special guest on the 7th. Pianist Michelle Rosewoman leads the Quintessence Ensemble at the Cell Theater in Manhattan on the 8th. Pianist David Vireyes is at the Jazz Gallery with drummer Marcus Gilmore on the 8th. Looking a little further ahead, pianist Billy Childs leads a quartet at the Jazz Standard from the 13th through the 16th. Saxophonist Kenny Garrett leads a quintet at the Blue Note from the 13th through the 16th. Saxophonist Oliver Lake is at Brooklyn's Brick Arts Media on the 13th and 14th, and leads a big band at the Jazz Gallery from the 21st through the 22nd. Pianist Harold Mayburn is at Smoke with a Quartet from the 14th through the 16th, and leads a trio at Smalls on the 19th. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at Darrell's House in Pawling, New York, with Ministers of Sound on the 16th. Saxophonist Gary Bartz is at the Blue Note on the 17th, with pianist McCoy Tyner. Finally, the full schedule of the 22nd Vision Fest has been announced, running from May 28th through June 3rd of this year at Judson Memorial Church, and we've got a link to it up on the blog as well, so head on over there and make your plans. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. If you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And if you like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The support WBAI link on our website has details. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, April 16th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on The Bandstand.
Hi, this is Cindy Lauper, and you're listening to WBAI.
Really got a hold on me.
Public radio. Gotta love it.
Now, speaking of swinging and, to me, funky, Cloud Nine. I think, is both funky and swinging.
Thank you. And it is both of those things. You are right. It is both of those things. That one's my current favorite.
Okay.
And the thing about that is I've got to find out whose version. Somebody did a kind of up Latin-y version, I think, of it. It sort of inspired the beginning, the funkier part for me.
Oh, okay.
And then I thought it's got to change feels. And I was actually thinking of Charles Mingus, you know, because Charles Mingus will take a tune and he'll shift. Mm-hmm. Into a halftime feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll shift into a double time feel or a quadruple time. You know,
right.
he'll shift not so much the time as the feels of them.
Right.
And so that's what we did a lot of on that one. So it sort of makes you, shifts you a little bit while you're listening to it, which is fun.
I like that a lot. Your treatment of Ain't That Peculiar, I thought that that felt like, I'd actually want to know, what is the time signature? Because it's like Scarborough's Fair, the Beatles tune, Scarborough Fair.
Thank you.
bass line starts off in 4/4. The bass line starts off like the record.
Okay.
Boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom, boom. And then it goes into 6/8.
Okay, okay.
It's just in 6. So it's just, it's, the most of it is just in 6.
Okay.
But just kind of the way everybody played it. And there is some feeling, we wanted to, you know, it's called Ain't That Peculiar, so mm-hmm. we wanted it to be a little bit peculiar.
Got it.
We took nice. It a little bit out.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. I like yeah. it a lot. You know,
yeah.
I've got favorites. I like the release. You know, it's all cool. But I, you know, I just have to say I got my favorites.
Good. Well, I hope it's because those were some of your favorite Motown tunes, too.
They were, actually, especially where you play flute, The One Who Really Loves You.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like that one
a
lot.
Great.
That's Mary Wells.
One, you know, the other flute one on there is The Hunter Gets Captured by the Game.
Yes.
And what I've noticed is there's a certain age, because we played this out in front of people a fair amount now before it was released. We did gigs with it. So what I've noticed is that there's a group of people, and I think they're a little bit older than me, because I didn't know that tune. That was one of the ones Doug knew. But people know that song from the radio from when they were kids, and that's their tune. And boy, do I see them identify that tune and start singing along right away.
Wow.
That's what I like to watch, people respond to the tunes, because at first they aren't quite sure what it is. As soon as they know what it is, there is a reaction, and sometimes they mouth the words.
Nice.
I love that. I love it. I love it. Love it.
I noticed there's something you didn't do as a person releasing music. There is nothing on here that was written by you. Was that on purpose?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't feel any need to put an original on this.
Okay.
This is a love song to the Detroit years of Motown. And, you know, I do compose some, but I don't see myself primarily as a composer.
Got it.
And I see it as something I do when I'm inspired to do it.
Okay.
So I did it a couple records ago. I composed a whole record, actually with Steve, the piano player on this record.
Mm-hmm.
We did a whole thing called the Mary Joyce Project.
I was going to ask you about that. Do you want to tell us about Mary Joyce? Who is Mary Joyce? And why is there a project that you created?
I love to talk about Mary Joyce.
Excellent.
Mary Joyce was my father's first cousin. In 1934, she did a solo dog sled trip from Juneau to Fairbanks, Alaska, with five dogs. And she had some Tlingit Indian guides along the way, but she largely did this by herself in the winter. I met her when I was a kid. She was a very unique person. I knew when I met her, I had never met anybody like her. A true pioneer. She did a route from Juneau to Fairbanks that was untouched before that. It was uncharted territory.
Wow.
The Iditarod didn't even exist when she was up there doing this stuff. In fact, she cut the ribbon on the second Iditarod, I think. And she lived in Juneau her whole life. She came back to Juneau. So I knew her. I met her when I was a kid. And then my cousin, who's older, had known her very well, had lived in Juneau with her, I think, for a while. And she published her journals from the trip. And I got the journal, and it just blew my head open. I couldn't believe how great it was. In fact, I'm going to see if I can find one and tell you what it's called. Because it's one of those books, it's published by Author House. So, you know, it's like print-on-demand kind of book, I think.
Okay.
And it's called Mary Joyce, Taku to Fairbanks, 1,000 Miles by Dog Team. And it's by Mary Ann Greiner, G-R-E-I-N-E-R. And it's such a great read. It's that trip in her words. And it was crazy. It was a wild trip. So I finished the book and I put it down and I was like, this is a relative of mine. I need to write music for her.
Nice.
So I went to Alaska and I went for 2 weeks to research and I found people that she had known there. She died in the 70s, but there were still people around that knew her. She was kind of a legend in the town. Because she came back to Alaska and she tried to work in a bar, and women were not allowed to be bartenders. So she bought a bar.
Okay, then.
Called Toppy's Top Hat. So she was the bar owner, and then she could be the bartender.
Wow.
But then she moved across the street and opened the Lucky Lady, which is still there.
Is that also a bar?
Fantastic. Yes, in Juneau.
Okay.
And there was, now when I was there, the guy who had been her partner in the bar still owned it at that time. And there was a lot of paraphernalia around hers and things about her trip and kind of her story was there on the walls. And I don't know, somebody's bought it since then. I don't know if it's still a tribute to her in that way. But the Mary Joyce Project is a very dear to my heart project because Mary was a wild, true free spirit. I loved writing music for her, and I loved thinking about her, and I loved meeting people that knew her that told me all kinds of hilarious stories. And she was a character. It was pretty great researching her and writing that music. And Steve got all into it with me, and I went to her grave, and I asked her to help me get it right.
Nice. That always helps a project. That's fine.
That's crazy.
No,
that's,
no, that's what most people should do if they're going to encounter an ancestor. Get
exactly.
Help me out. Is it okay? Are you good with this? All right.
I love the ancestors. I'm always calling upon the ancestors.
That's right.
They know more than I do, for sure.
That's right.
So I asked her to help me get it right, and we're happy with that project. Oh, and then we premiered it in Alaska. While I was there, I hooked up with the Juneau Jazz Festival, and we premiered it in Juneau. It was thrilling.
You added a fifth player to this project, Napoleon Maddox.
Yes, Napoleon is a beatboxer.
Yes.
He is my brother, man. Napoleon lives in Cincinnati. Oh, I love telling you about all these people. Napoleon lives in Cincinnati, and he has a group there called Is What. But he was in New York years ago, and our mutual friend Joe Fonda, a bass player.
Oh, yes.
Said, you know Joe. Well, Joe
yes.
said, I found this beatboxer, and I like playing with him, and let's get together. And I have a place to play. I have a studio where we can play music. So they both came over, and Joe was late. So Napoleon walks in, and it was like we had known each other forever.
Wow.
It was such a deep connect so fast. I call him my favorite brother because he is. I mean, and he feels like blood. He feels like my brother.
Nice.
And he's a terrific beatboxer who comes out of hip-hop,
right,
but also out of jazz, because Jack Walker in Cincinnati turned him on to really more of the avant-garde scene. So
huh.
One of his favorite drummers and someone he works a lot with is Hamid Drake.
Oh, yes.
Out of Chicago.
We love Hamid here. He
Isn't
is our
he the greatest?
Oh, he can play anything at any time in any way.
I know.
Love
He's a
him.
Magic magician.
Yes.
So Hamid and Napoleon are dear friends. So all these connects started happening, and I've been out on the road with Napoleon in various incarnations of Is What. We've been to Europe, and we've traveled in the Midwest. We have hilarious road stories, and it's just a big love. Fest. So I brought Napoleon in. You know, Mary was such a free spirit and open mind. And Mary loved music, Mary Joyce. And she would have loved that band. I just brought Napoleon in on it because I could, you know.
Oh, it's wonderful.
This is our chance to work together because I just produced that myself.
And that's on Daily Bread Records. Daily, you. Daily Bread Records.
Me being Daily. With,
exactly.
With the double meaning being it's my money and it's
right.
Daily Bread in that I'm pretty much came up with the project. So
nice.
All puns intended.
And Joe Fonda, my partner and I, Hank, who also works with Sugar Mabo, he's the associate producer. We saw him with Archie Shepp last
year.
Yeah,
he did a lot of work with Archie for years.
Yes. So, yay.
And actually,
nice
Napoleon's worked with Archie also in Europe.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, yeah.
To look for that.
One Horse Planet.
I like that.
I was born in Yonkers.
So you were born in Yonkers.
Yonkers. We say Yonkers.
Yonkers, yes.
Yonkers.
So what was life in Yonkers like musically?
Life growing up was pretty great for me. I was lucky in that I lived right outside of Manhattan, and my father was very supportive. And when I wanted to play an instrument, and I randomly picked the saxophone, alto saxophone, he started coming home with tickets to concerts in the city. You know, he worked in the city, and he would come home with tickets. And he took me to the Westchester County Center, actually, to see a big band concert, and that was the epiphany night of my life. I mean, I was flipping out hearing all these different bands and these different jazz musicians, and I saw the band buses outside. I made them get autographs with me.
Goodness.
And I saw the band buses.
Wow.
And I said, I would do anything to be on that bus. You know, I wanted to get on a band bus and drive away.
Wow.
I'm sure he was appropriately amused, but it took a while. But I ended up on many band buses, and I couldn't wait to get off them, by the way. So there's an irony involved.
Right. Actually, I noticed there's one band that you were with. It seems like everyone's made some sort of pit stop with a Kit McClure band.
Oh, sure. I've worked with Kit for years.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I mean, God bless Kit McClure. I mean, she has employed many, many women here in New York.
Right.
And she's done a lot of good for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a wonderful person.
Now, I noticed there's one thing that you do. And the first time I heard it was through the AACM, Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, co-founder, Phil Curran. He emphasized the discipline of long tones. Now, first, could you explain what long tones are? and then your relationship with them?
Well, that's a very deep relationship in my life. To me, that's the most important thing that we do as saxophone players, or as horn players, really, because, A, it's your breathing. I mean, it's a meditation, if you will, but you don't have to look at it that way. But it's all about your breathing and your air and your air control. Now, we're playing woodwind instruments, and if you don't have the wind in the instrument, it doesn't sound. You can know all the math and all the science, but if you don't have the air going through the horn correctly, you're going to be suffering. So it's also the thing that we do to develop our tone, which is our voice. Your tone is really your stamp. You could take three great saxophone players, and each one is instantly recognizable as who they are. If you put a record on with John Coltrane, it's like picking up the phone and hearing your mother's voice say hi.
Right.
You don't have to ask who it is.
Right.
It's a sound that is so specifically that person that it couldn't be anybody else.
Right.
Same with Sonny Rollins or Dexter Gordon. God, so many. Ornette Coleman.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, everybody.
Sure.
Their sound. Now, they could be playing the same line, but they're not going to sound the same because it's them. It's such a personal thing. So, to me, long tones are the primary part of the game. Actually, probably, for me, to the exclusion of some technique. There are players with a lot more technique than I have, but I've focused more on sound.
Mm.
And I keep trying to get around to all the technique. My relationship to long tones is I just came home a little while ago. I was over at my studio playing some long tones.
So okay.
It's kind of, that's a big one for me.
Oh, wonderful. You also mentioned how it is also meditative. Do you want to go into that as
so.
Well?
Well, I wish I was more of a meditator per se, but I feel like that the pureness of playing one note and you're focusing on your breathing. It's all about the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty much a meditation, I suppose.
Yeah.
Being as present as you can be with the sound that you're making.
Yep, that about sums it up.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess it is. That's how I meditate.
Excellent.
Yeah. So any saxophone players out there, any youngins coming up, do your long tones.
That's the best advice.
You know, they resist them. Students resist them a lot because they're not that interesting. It's not like you're using your mathematical mind. And so a lot of students, they want to go fast and they want to do other things. But I'm pretty insistent on that. And most teachers are. Most teachers get into that to some degree. But I really make them do it. I make them do it at the lesson.
Is that how the lesson starts?
Yeah.
Good.
It was actually, do you know Lenny Pickett?
I've read that you have a relationship. He was with, what was it, Blood, Sweat, and Tears? Or
he
somebody.
Was the Tower Power.
Tower Power, that's it.
Power.
I know it was another horn band, I'm sorry.
There you go. I understand the transposition. But he was with Tower Power, and he's been the guy on Saturday Night Live all of these years. He's the guy who's got the 5-octave range, who can play notes that only dogs can hear. You know, I mean, he's an incredible saxophonist. And I'm not close to him, but I know him, and I love him and love to see him. But his thing in teaching someone said, split your practice time into thirds.
Yes.
One third of your time, long tones and sound production, because there are a lot of different things you can do to do long tones. One third of your time, technique, and one third of your time, music. Maybe learn a tune or work on an etude or play something, you know, this is practice time. Play something musical or turn out the lights and play free, you know, like whatever. But do some music, some technique, and some long tones every day.
Nice.
And I've taught that to many students, and I always credit Lenny for it, which is probably why my name's connected to him somewhere, because I always credit him for saying that, and I think it's brilliant. Because if you have 15 minutes to kill, you can do 5 minutes of each of those things, and it's going to benefit you. Whereas if you just sat down and kind of noodled around on something you already know or something, you know, it's easy to waste 15 minutes, and you can make big strides just in little pieces of working on those three things. And then if you have 6 hours and you do 2 hours of long tone.
Right.
You know,
hey.
Actually, I love that, but then I can't have a conversation with anybody afterwards. I can't talk after that because it's just you're in this other space.
I would think so. Your headspace is different. If you're not talking to another musician,
and even then, it's pretty far out after 2 hours of long time.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that in a long time, really, but I advocate it, and I do them. I still do them all the time.
Warren Smith, I've noticed that you've... What is your relationship to Warren Smith? I've noticed he's been on some of your recordings. You've been on some of his.
Wow, you've really done the homework here, girlfriend.
That's what
Absolutely.
I do. I do homework.
Boy.
So we have something to talk about.
I know, but nobody's ever brought up Warren in an interview. That's delicious. That's wonderful.
Ah.
Well, I adore Warren Smith.
Yay.
And I know him from, I have to think about this, when he had Studio Wiz in Chelsea. You know, I live in Chelsea.
Uh-huh.
So he had this place right around the corner. At that time, when I bought my first baritone, that one I mentioned earlier, it turned out that that girl who I bought it from had bought it from Howard Johnson.
Tubist.
And Howard, then it turned out that Howard lived around the corner from me.
Oh.
Now, I was a huge Howard Johnson fan from a Rahsaan Roland Kirk album.
Yes.
Called The Return of the 5,000 Men, which he plays tuba on.
Yes, he does.
And I flipped out when I met Howard. And I was like, well, first I flipped out when I got the horn. Because I was like, oh, my God, it said HJ on the case.
Wow.
And then I found out Howard was my neighbor, and we befriended. And then, of course, I met Warren through him and that whole crowd, you know, Jack Jeffers and Warren and Howard. And who else? There's a whole gang of guys that were just all friends and kind of local or had worked a lot. And I started playing with them in various things. In fact, I'm going to play with Warren, I think, the first weekend in May over at the Baha'i Center.
Oh, wow.
Maybe the first Tuesday in May, because I just love him. He played on my Heaven Help Us All record.
Yes.
He played vibes on that incredibly. And he played drums in J.C. Hopkins' Biggish Band, which I've been in for many years. And he was in that for a bunch of years. He hasn't done that lately, but you never know. You know, people are always shifting around. And I've played on some of his records that I've loved. And I've been at the Baha'i Center with him before, too. And I just think what a real deal cat that is. I adore Warren Smith, and I'm playing on Tuesday, May 2nd with him. He's doing a composer's workshop ensemble at the Baha'i Center, which is over there on 11th Street, I think right off of University.
It's 53 East 11th Street between Broadway and University Place.
That's it.
You can find out more about that at Baha'i NYC. That's BAHAINYC.org.
Tuesday, May 2nd.
Excellent.
Probably at 7:30.
All right. When you decided to record as a leader, how did you reach that decision? What did you do? You woke up and said, okay, I'm going to record as a leader now. I'm tired of doing these side
projects.
Oh,
that's a great question.
Yes.
That's a wonderful question. Thank you. Yes, you know, I've been a side person for many years in a million different situations, in countless musical situations. Oh, one of the people that I had played with quite a bit was Joel Forrester. You might know also, some of your listeners might know Joel. He's a spectacular composer and pianist. Actually, he wrote the theme for Terry Gross's Fresh Air show that they used for years. And he's written thousands, over 2,000 tunes.
Wow.
I mean, he's a prolific writer and a great player and a quirky, and I say that in a loving, happy way.
Uh-huh.
You know, just a unique, I won't say quirky, how about unique? He's a unique human. I've played with him over 25 years now, but back in the day, we had done a record or two on Koch Jazz, and Donald Elfman at Koch Jazz said, if you want to do something as a leader, I'll put it out for you. And I thought, yeah, I would love to do that. So I just kind of picked a bunch of tunes that I'd always liked and made Swing Low, which was my first record
as
a leader.
Right.
You know, I didn't mention Diva. I had been in Diva for a long time, too. I was the first baritone player in the big band Diva.
Oh, wow.
And I did that for 7 years, which was very consuming. We actually were traveling a lot then, and we worked quite a bit, and it was a fantastic experience.
Who was the leader?
That was winding down for me.
Was
Sherry
that a collective? Okay, Sherry. Okay, yeah. She's another one, like Kip McClure, who's always,
Sherry
has like billions of women coming through their lot.
That's right. No, they're really, it's a service in a way. And, you know, to have a big band, and I would say this about both of them, to have a big band is the most generous act you can do in music, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Because I can barely keep a quintet rolling. And to keep that many people employed and rehearsing and doing whatever needs to be done is a real testament to your generosity, among other things. I mean, you have to have fierce chops to do that. And Sherry Miracle and Devo was a very nice experience for me, and they still exist and they're still around, giving a lot of young women an opportunity to play that they might not otherwise get.
Right. They also, while they're providing that service, they're also, and they have to be, really great businesswomen. Did you learn anything from being in those groups, business-wise?
Oh, I think I did. I think I learned a lot. Not as much in tips, because my mentality at that time, you know, it was long before, and I think my mentality at that time was way more of a side person mentality.
Okay.
But by the time I was into Diva a few years, you know what happens, and I'm sure others have had this experience. Here I am, a New York side person working, and I got into Diva, and all of a sudden we were doing these kind of high-scale gigs, very nice gigs. We're backing up big people. We were doing a lot of old showbiz stuff, because our manager, Stanley Kay, was old-school showbiz, and he knew he had a lot of connections, and you know, we played with Rosemary Clooney. And we backed up Joe Williams.
Oh, wow.
You know, and Jack Jones.
Wow.
And all these, like, people that, like, was just, like, it was almost avant-garde. but it was fantastic. We were backing them up, but we had a blazingly great big band book. We were playing jazz festivals, and we went to Europe a few times, and we were having this great experience. And once you get a taste of stuff, all of a sudden, I want to do more of that.
Yeah.
I want to do more festivals. I want to do more of these gigs that are different and new and exciting. So as you get a taste of some other kind of gigs and what other possibilities there are for you, it makes you want to do it more, I think. It did me, anyway. So coming out of Diva, when I think was around the time when that all came together. And I was also always playing with Joel Forrester, too, quite a bit. So that combination of starting to have the hankering to do the leader thing, and Donald Elfman offering me the chance to, is how that happened.
Excellent. As a leader, of course, and you've done this for a bit, so there's this constant, and I think you talked about it earlier, the constant getting the gig and, you know, just finding the next thing, keeping the players together or keeping them busy because, you know, of course, they're in demand everywhere else as well. I'm sure it hasn't gotten easier. Have you learned something along the way?
Great question. Yes, I think that what I've learned along the way of that part of this path as a musician is that I know that there is very little illusion of security.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much know what I'm doing the next 2 months of my life. And that's pretty much been the story of my adult life. I might be jammed with things to do, and then in 3 months, there's nothing in the book yet. But what I've learned is to just have the knowledge that it keeps unfolding. And if I stay with what I'm doing, the work fills in.
Excellent.
I have a term for it. I call it Mr. Magooing my way through life. If you remember Mr. Magoo, in the beginning of the show, he was blind, and he'd be walking, and he'd just be walking along, and he'd be walking off a cliff, and a girder would come and catch him and pick him up and move him somewhere else, and he'd walk off the girder, and he'd be on the next garbage can or whatever, you know.
Right.
He just walked guilelessly through life.
Oh, goodness.
And something showed up under those feet every time. So that's what I call my lifestyle, is Mr. Magooing my way through life.
I love it.
Because, you know, you could have a big secure job, too, or think that you do, and that can go away in a minute. Or, you know, you could have your big high-paying gig. Anything can happen. Life is not really secure.
This is true.
And so I kind of thrive on that. Now, I don't love that fact. I wouldn't mind a little more illusion of security.
Right.
But most of my friends could not, like maybe non-musician friends, could not imagine not knowing what you're going to be doing in 3 months or 6 months. They really need to have more of a sense of regularity. And I have just chosen somehow to settle into irregularity.
Mm. But doesn't teaching fill in some of that regularity?
It gives it a little stability, but frankly, at this time, I've never taught at a school.
Okay.
I've never had a steady teaching job at a school. I did teach in the middle school program at Jazz at Lincoln Center for 10 years.
Wow.
And that ended last year. The person who hired me moved on, and as often happens, when new people come in, they bring their people. So
exactly.
It wasn't anything horrible happening.
It was just life,
you know.
Right.
And that program was wonderful for 10 years. That was a happy spot for me. So I thank Eli Yeaman for that.
Oh, yay.
Brought me in to that. I bet you know Eli, too.
Well, you play with him. That's how I know him.
Yeah.
He's a pianist.
He's on Heaven Help Us All.
Exactly.
He's on Swing Low. Too,
yes, he is. Exactly.
And he's on Moving On.
See there.
Yeah. So that's how that all works. And the teaching for me is very sporadic. Sometimes I'll have a steady 4 students from some school or some way or another, you know, it happens, and I get some steady students. And they're good through June, and then they're gone.
Oh,
you know. So
okay.
I have not created a stable life of teaching.
Okay.
Yeah, well, good or bad, I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know.
It just is.
The coin's in the air.
Okay.
But I love to teach.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I want to say this, too. I've taught at Litchfield Jazz Camp for the last 18 years.
Wow.
Now, there's a steady gig. 2 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
But that's my steady gig. And I love teaching at jazz camp. It's a riot. It's awesome because these kids, if there's a kid in high school and they're really into jazz, they might be the only kid in their class who's into it. There might be one or two others, or maybe a little clump of them will realize, oh, this is cool and we like jazz. So everywhere they are, they're sort of an outsider because their taste is jazz. I mean, this is true for adults too, I guess. But then these kids come to camp and they're there with 150 kids that are into jazz. And it's like watching them just bloom in front of you. They just come to life and it's exciting and really fun. And they're doing this concentrated. They all get better.
Nice.
They have to. They're playing so much music. Yeah, I really love teaching at Litchfield. It's a great jazz camp.
Yay.
And I've taught at some other ones. I do a fair amount of teaching. I do clinics a lot, too. High school, college, middle school, whatever. Teaching, I didn't really pursue that. I started at Berkeley. I didn't make that decision because I wanted to be a teacher. But by the third semester, I was like, wait a minute, I've got these classes and I can't play the clarinet yet. You know, it just seemed all my priorities just became clear and I went into a performance program.
Got it. When I texted you, you were with somebody, Moist Paula Henderson.
Moist Paula!
Yeah,
Paula
is she a student, or were you just jamming, or you got a project?
No, Paula Henderson is one of my dearly beloved best buddies.
Ah, she just happens to play baritone.
That girl is a riot. She's so fun. Well, you know, you can't help but bond with people who play your instrument.
Yes.
What could be better? You're going
to
understand things that nobody else would understand. She and I met through Napoleon Maddox.
Oh, the beatbox, the human beatbox. Yes.
Beatboxer Napoleon Maddox. He was in town. Whenever he's in town, we hang out. And he's like, come with me. I'm going to hear Reverend Vince at Union Pool in Brooklyn. And so I went, and Paula was there. And we had a wonderful initial meeting. And then we were sort of peripheral friends for a while. And in the last couple of years, we have just become great buddies because she's really fun. And she's also a free spirit, that gal, boy. She knows how to invent and manifest. And we always talk about that. And we call ourselves the Witches of West Chelsea.
Well, to paraphrase something you have said, she probably also doesn't mind hanging a 20-plus pound of metal and blowing air into it.
I know.
Being why you chose to play.
What was I thinking? Yeah, let me take this big, heavy thing and hang it on my neck. But, yeah, that's just been the course of the life. Actually, as I'm getting older, I couldn't have made a better choice for me. This is a very happy choice for me. I've enjoyed this life. I mean, not that I'm planning on it stopping anytime soon, but this worked. I was so lucky that at 12 years old, something happened that shocked me into, like, this is what I want to do with my life. Imagine that, and I'm still doing it way later.
Yay!
Way later.
Well, thank you so much, Claire Daly, for joining Sugar in My Bowl and sharing 2648 West Grand Boulevard with the rest of us. Just so people know that the subtitle is Jazz Interpretations of Classic Motown 45s. That is the complete title.
Yes, and it's on Glass Beach Jazz.
Glass Beach
and
Jazz.
The best place to get it is their website.
Uh-huh.
Glass blackbeachjazz.com because they have a download there for it, and they sell the physical product if you want to order it. It's really been fun doing it, and it's been really fun seeing how people respond to it.
If you'd like to listen to these selections, you won't be able to download because you have to go to Glass Beach and order it proper. But you can go to Suga, S-U-G-A in my bowl, .org. We'll have it up for 3 weeks.
Oh, great.
So you can get around to it. You hear it. You'll love it. And then you go to Glass Beach Jazz.
Yes, so go to Suga in my bowl and then go to Glass Beach Jazz. So you're having a little something sweet and then you're going to the beach.
Right. Is there anything else you want to share with the WBAI audience?
Well, I would love to mention something that I'm doing in April on the 10th through the 14th is the Conference on World Affairs, which is in Boulder, Colorado. And it's been happening for 75 years. It's a think tank of sorts, and they have a jazz concert on Wednesday night, and I've been invited to be in the band and to be on some of the panels at this conference. So I'm going to be attending the conference all week and doing a couple other music things, but then playing Wednesday night, and then some of us from the band are going to play in the big jazz club there on Friday and Saturday night, too.
Wow.
Called Dazzle. But this conference is available online. And check it out. I think there probably would be interesting things for your listeners, too. It's the Conference on World Affairs. The 100 speakers that they have, some are scientists. I saw some people from NASA are going to be there. There are writers there, political people there. There are food people there. It's quite a variety. So if they have a panel on global warming, it might be two experts on global warming, an astronaut and a musician.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very interesting. They mix up the panelists to keep different perspectives in there and sort of keep it interesting for everyone. Because if you don't know so much about the panel, there'll be somebody else on the panel who doesn't know. They might ask the question that you had.
So it's actually part of the University of Colorado Boulder's site. So it's colorado.edu/CWA for a Conference on World Affairs.
Oh, thank you. It's happened for 75 years, and it's been attended by people like Buckminster Fuller, and there's some interesting history in the conference.
There's a Learn More button there, so you can go and find out more about it.
Oh, yeah. There's a list of all of the people with the little bio about all of the people that are on the panels.
Yes.
And it's really fun. I'm still going through it myself. I look at a few every day.
They have the speakers and the musicians, the performers.
And I'm in there. I got
That's
a
right.
bio in there.
Colorado.edu/CWA.
Just everybody take care of yourself and your people. And in these crazy times, I really hope that the music that I make is, at this point, a reprieve from the madness that's going on around us. Because really, who could have imagined how crazy this planet would get?
So true.
But without getting political about it, what I see as part of my mission here is to provide a little something else, a little break from all of that.
Just so you know, we don't mind if you get political here. We don't have a problem.
Oh, I know WBAI since I was in high school. Are you kidding? I know. Believe me, when I feel like getting political, I'm coming right to you.
Well, thank you so much, Claire Daly. Have a great evening.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My pleasure. Have a great night.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
And you're listening to the closing moments of Suga in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening was Claire Daly, and we have been featuring her latest release, 2648 West Grand Boulevard, Jazz Interpretations of Classic Motown 45s. This is on the Glass Beach label, released this year. What you're listening to right now is Hunter Gets Captured by the Game. Before that, we heard Determined from Claire Daly's Mary Joyce Project, Nothing to Lose. This is a 2011 Daly Bread Records release. That's D-A-L-Y Bread Records release. Claire Daly on baritone sax, alto saxophone, producer, flute, composer, vocals. Peter Grant on drums. Steve Hudson on piano, composer, also producer. Marianne Sweeney on bass. Napoleon Maddox, Human Beatbox. Before that, we heard The One Who Really Loves You, Ain't That Peculiar, Cloud 9, all from Claire Daly's latest release, 2648 West Grand Boulevard. And as mentioned earlier, you can hear the selections on our blog. Just go to Suga, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, .org. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa, coming up next, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.